D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Hey, welcome to another episode of D&D Versus. I am your Dungeon Master, Yanato Blue, and with me this week is...
Oh, hi, it's me, Steffa Nunes, back again as Smashing Pam.
I couldn't resist passing it over. I'm sorry, I should have warned you about that. That's on my part. Welcome back. Thank you for playing and for continuing this this player chain that we're starting to get going.
Yay, I'm excited to have Smashing Pam go down smashing.
Yeah, so before we dive in, I'd like to ask you for another factoid or, you know, piece of Smashin' Pam's original adventure before she woke up in this world.
Oh, okay. So Pam has kind of like a small life by outside perspectives where she kind of just stays in her village. She works at the brewery. She delivers to the taverns. But the reason she's so attached to her job delivering it to all the taverns is that's where she meets all the different musicians who are traveling in and out of the town, and where she picks up different information. She's learning about all the different instruments out there. So her dream of being a bard seems almost attainable to her. She just wants to like get to know more about what she can play as a gigantic orc lady, because like a lute is not going to work for her.
Well, that just leads to the question, like, beginning with the end in mind, do you know what that special instrument is going to be for Smashin' Pam?
I'm thinking something like a washboard, honestly. A nice rhythm instrument that she can grab. She's a barbarian. She will have, like, some proficiency with improvised weapons. Why not improvised instruments?
Yeah, I mean, that also feels like very, like, classic, like, Looney Tunes, when Looney Tunes, like, was T-U-N-E-S, because it was, like, all musical cartoony stuff.
Where almost all of my opera knowledge comes from, yes.
I think that's everybody's opera knowledge. It's why everybody can, like, sing Traviata, but, like, does not know who actually composed it.
Exactly. And I mean, what do you need more than knowing the music? With Pam, kind of the concept is like she would be the type of person who grabs a couple of spoons and like, oh, these clink together really cool. I guess my general inspiration for her musical vibe would be Gene Belcher of Bob's Burgers, where she'll just find some stuff to put together and make some interesting noises out of it.
I dig it. All right. Speaking of Smashin' Pam's revival, recap for last episode, we actually started with Stephen Hark, who, venturing into the mines on the island, was quickly overwhelmed by a rafter of abyssal turkeys. After dying at the hands and beaks, I suppose, of these turkeys more appropriately, Smashin' Pam came on the scene, finding a turkey massacre rather than a turkey rafter, and met Captain Ludlow and sweet dog boy Groucho, took them through the mines to a noisy door that she managed to open. Congratulations on solving that quote-unquote puzzle again for putting up with
Yay.
Me. And on the other side of that door, your new companion slash mount slash fuzzy round friend Buddy, a giant capybara, joined the group, took Buddy, Ludlow, and Groucho for a ride, landed in the ocean, and found your way to the shore to the east of the prison island, where you have found your way into joining a party of young people who introduce themselves as the group known as the Never Politicos, or the Nepos for short. You have made friends with the female half of that group, Nicole, Sophia, and Emma, and Ludlow is there with you, and they have asked you to join the party, and that they have a job that they want to talk to you about, or some assistance that they want to talk to you about with dismantling the patriarchy.
So Pam, yet again, she doesn't really understand the concept of the patriarchy, but she does understand like, oh, there are bad men and these are nice girls and we've met at this fun party. So these are now my best friends. So I am ride or die for them.
I feel like just like a good Disney movie, you can make like moves at a party. You know, you get to like make dramatic moves at a party that may get people to like you or dislike you. And to determine how many of those little moves you get, I first want a charisma roll to see how many opportunities you're able to suss out to like get your opening.
All right, come on, Pam. I got a 16.
16. All right, so that is going to net you 3 possible party moves. First, I want you to give me a perception roll, but then you can tell me what you want your party move to be.
All right. So my perception roll is a 15.
With your perception roll, you notice that the food staff, like I mentioned, that this party, you know, it's kind of this open glen. There's a bonfire in the center. On one side of the bonfire, there's a band of gnomes playing music. It's fairly upbeat. It's fairly energetic. It's kind of in line with like the closest you can get with a fantasy band to like something you could mosh to, probably up Smashing Pam's alley. On the other side of the bonfire is this enormous spread. So there's all this food and there's a variety of people that are working. But as you are about to make your first party move, you notice that the food staff all seem to look in the same direction of the woods and they all kind of wander off together into the dark. What would you like your first party move to be?
Well, now I'm a little nervous about seeing the staff wander off while the party is still going, because that's not usually a good sign for a party, because they're in the know before anything else goes down. So Pam's going to clock this and immediately be like, all right, that's sus, and I got to check this out. But first things first is my new best friends, Emma, Sophia, and Nicole. I got my dog on my back. I want to go do shots with my girls.
While you have your dog on your back, Groucho is singing along to the sort of, I don't want to call it the chorus because it isn't the chorus of this song. He is singing along to this sort of refrain that is closing out the number that the band is currently playing. And he keeps saying, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. And of course, the ladies find it unbearably charming, as I said repeatedly last session.
Yeah, if they had not been charmed by my puppy, if they were not nice to him, they would not be her friends, because he's her friend first. Like, you got to be nice to everybody. So the fact that they're all vibing, she is amazingly vibing too.
Absolutely. You lead the ladies over to the spread where there's all kinds of liquors and drinks. It's very, very rich. Give me an insight roll, actually.
All right. Pam with her plus zero to insight got a 10.
So yeah, you can tell that they've got a lot of different stuff. I mean, whatever Pam's liquor of choice for that kind of like, you know, power shot kickoff is, you can find it. So I picture Pam is more of like a whiskey type of lady.
I was honestly going to say like Everclear.
Ooh.
She is gigantic. And she knows that her tiny friends do not have the same alcohol tolerance as her because she respects people's party boundaries. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be like, listen, I'm going to line up three of these shots to catch up with you guys. And then you guys do whatever amount of shots you're comfortable with. And let's all do some shots together.
Everybody agrees and they all pour shots, but I need you to make a dex saving throw for me.
Am I blinded, deafened, or incapacitated in any way?
No, you are not.
Okay, that means I get advantage on that. So my first one is an 11 and my second one is a 13.
You pass. As you're bringing up your first shot, Sophia, the elf, does that move where she like swoops her arm around yours so that you both have like the interlocking elbows thing so you can look each other in the eyes while you take the shot. And then the other two ladies line up behind her to then, since you've lined up three shots and there's three of them, they're each going to do that with you. But the risk for the deck save was that Sophia wasn't giving you a warning. She just swoops in, but you manage to roll with it and like you end up perfectly smooth and you do the shot.
And she's so much littler than me that I end up like hooking her up on my arm and she gets launched into the air as we do the shot, but it still looks amazing.
So I just had her roll performance and she turns it into like a full like ballerina, like kicking twirl where it's almost like they're lined up to dance with you. So next up is Nicole the dwarf. She jumps up and does like a Super Mario ground pound to like end the shot. And then finally, all of them rolled really well on their performance to roll along with this. So Emma the gnome, she swoops up onto your shoulder and like puts her arm around Groucho and continues singing, fuck you, I will do what you tell me with him.
Pam is having the time of her life. She's like, oh my God, the party got started so fast, so perfectly. All of this went great. I love you guys so much. But I want to find out from my new girls here, do any of you all know speak with animals?
Nicole steps up and says, I know speak with animals.
Yes! So Nicole, I have a new friend and you're gonna love him, but I can't talk to him because I don't have speak with animals, but you could talk to him and maybe you could help me talk to him. Would you be okay with that?
Absolutely. I will speak with him and I will not count this as an extra party move. Where is this animal?
So I bring her to the outskirts of the party where my buddy has been chilling out, and I walk up to him and I put my hand under his nose so he can sniff and notice that it's me. And give him a little scritch and say, hey, buddy, how you doing, bud?
She gets down, like stoops low, and she moves slowly, and then she kneels and stays, you know, a few feet behind you. and just holds her hand out, the back of her hand upward. Kind of like she's doing that enchanté thing, but she's clearly holding it out for Buddy to smell at his own and approach at his own comfort. So she's taking a guarded approach. She's showing respect, like she's not rushing in. And you hear her mutter under her breath. She speaks an incantation. She's speaking the animal's language. So you're hearing the noise of a capybara coming from her throat. This like...
And Pam thinks it's the cutest thing she's ever seen in her entire life.
Buddy just like almost shaking the ground a little bit, just drops his hump like to sit, turns his head sideways 90 degrees and then goes. His name is Mr. Beepo.
Mr. Beepo, can you ask him if he feels okay after our adventure?
He says he is fine, but he would like some food.
All right, Mr. Beepo, I'm going to get you some food. Can he understand me?
And Mr. Beepo starts walking towards the buffet.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, so he understands me. His name is Mr. Beepo. He's doing okay. He's just hungry. And Pam's like, okay, good. I feel he has agency. He can do what he needs to. He knows that I communicate with him. And I'm going to pop my head back to talk to my little buddy Groucho and just be like, how are you doing, buddy? Like, been a lot of party, a lot of people. I know you were a little nervous, but I hope you're having a nice time. Are you having a nice time?
So what shoulder do you look over? Sorry.
I would look over my left shoulder. I've just been picturing him like popping over my left shoulder.
I'm doing great, but Groucho's on the other side.
I'm doing great, too. I'm having a great time. Emma here is lovely.
I'm still carrying Emma. Okay, I'm so sorry, Emma. I forgot that you were up there.
It's okay. You know, if you don't notice, then I guess it's not too much trouble to keep carrying.
You are light as a feather. I am delighted to be your steed, okay?
Hey, Groucho. She's got really broad shoulders.
Oh, that's it. I think I'm reading what you're putting down.
And so both of them, you feel like this scampering against your back as both of them climb up onto either of your shoulders.
So are they standing on my shoulders or are they each sitting on an individual shoulder with like their legs dangling in front of my arms?
The latter. They're using the top of your head as a headrest.
That's so cute. I love them so much. And I've got Nicole with me. Where's Sophia?
So Sophia is just talking to the other guys and Ludlow is kind of sauntered over to them. So it's like the three guys talking now to Sophia with Ludlow.
I'm going to grab my group and I'm going to wander over with my girls and my puppy and join Ludlow and the dudes. And as I go up for my second party move, I am going to suggest that we go up and join the mosh pit band area of things.
Go ahead and give me a persuasion roll or a performance roll.
I'm going to go with performance because I got a +4 to that one. Oh, I got an 8.
As you start approaching the band, and the band is now playing People of the Sun. Yes, I'm a big fan of Rage Against the Machine. Give me a perception roll for your second party move.
19.
As you're starting to like really go at it, with your persuasion roll, you really only manage to convince the people that have to go with you, which is to say that Emma and Groucho are along for the ride. And even if they're not totally into the music and dancing per se, they are enjoying the extra sort of like theme park ride of getting to ride on you while you're moshing out. No one else is really kind of moving closer to the band. They're all kind of staying that like, you know, 15 feet away closer to the fire, but they're not like off put by your dance moves or dancing or anything like that. They just are very stiffly standing by the fire.
She's not lassoing anybody in on this one.
Yeah. However, what you do notice with your perception roll is that Ludlow seems to see something. The food staff, I should mention, when they wandered off, they wandered to the north. Ludlow, on the other hand, he seems to see something just past the band and he goes walking into the forest eastward.
All right. So the food people went north. Ludlow's gone east. I have one party move left. All right. So what Pam wants to do now, because nobody liked her dancing and she's feeling a little bummed, is she is just going to climb up on the stage and kick the drummer off the drum set and play drums.
Give me an intimidation roll.
That would be a 23.
So with a 23, you kick Brad, this gnome, off the drum set And you manage to start drumming at least in time. So the band thinks it's kind of badass. And Brad just kind of like dusts himself off, looks at you, and realizes that even sitting at the drum set, you are still twice as tall as he is. I'm going to say that the gnome and the dog boy are jumping off to join Zach on the vocals at the front of the band. So they're like up there, you know, just headbanging with Zach, the gnome, while Brad saunters off and goes and helps himself to some liquor. Go ahead and give me a performance roll to see how well you do with the drums.
An 8.
Okay, so unfortunately, you are just completely off rhythm. It's real bad. Brad goes and does one shot, spits it out, walks back across the party, and just like he's going to run at you and try to tackle you, like trying to leap over his drum set to tackle you off.
So Pam doesn't even need, like, she sees how much she's fucked this up. She quits. This was party foul. Take it back.
So if you're getting up off the drum set willingly, you will not suffer any damage from an angry drummer gnome. He just takes his seat back and just picks up and intentionally just fires off the dirtiest drum solo.
If I can get like a 0.5 party move is to like just grab a shot off the bar and like put it next to his drum set is just be like, my bad, bro.
Well, as you finish up your third party move, I feel like you kind of break even, if I'm being honest, because one went so well, but the other two didn't go so bad. Like, they weren't terrible. So I feel like the first one counts for 2 pluses, and then the second and third each count for a negative, so you're just a wash. But you're already in pretty good graces to start. So, you know, maybe everybody just thinks like, hey, she's really enthusiastic, and at least you're not offending the wrong people.
Right. I figure the worst case scenario of the impression Pam has left is that she will be useful.
As you finish up making your amends with the drummer, you see lights approaching from the north. There are carriages approaching. They are lit by lanterns. They are fairly large. They're drawn by 4 horses, and it's 2 separate carriages sort of hitched together in a line. And they pull up at the edge of this glen. The door opens, and out steps a very matronly but very severe-looking woman with sort of short-cropped brunette hair. She's on the older side, like just past middle-aged. She steps off and looks a little bit tired at first, but then kind of like takes a deep breath and gets her officious nature on and says, okay, I hope you all have had a good time, but it is time to go home. You have a long day tomorrow. Your parents are demanding your presence at the hearings tomorrow, so we will be escorting you home to your manors. And 3 female guards come out behind her. They're all wearing armor and holding spears. None of them are brandishing the weapons. But you see a dwarf, a dragonborn, and a tiefling behind this woman. The band stops playing. The kids are all looking around. I'll remind you that Ludlow is nowhere to be seen anymore. The food staff has disappeared, but it's you and your Nepo friends. So what would you like to do?
Pam does not like a party being shut down early by the cops. That's not how we close this out. But she also doesn't want to make things worse for her friends, because she also knows that like when your parents come home at a house party, you got to kind of leave it to your friend to deal with the parents. You can't like just throw down hard on them. So I'm going to kind of, you know, look over at my Nepo baby pals and I'll just be like, listen, my friend has kind of wandered off and I got to find him. I'd love to smash these ladies up if you guys want to keep partying, but like, do you want me to smash them up so you can keep partying? Because I'll do it. I'm down. But I don't know. I don't like this.
Nicole in particular is going to say, no, but come and find us in the hearing hall tomorrow. I think that you can still be of use to us. I will be there first thing in the morning if we are going with her. And she kind of looks among her companions and all of them just kind of reluctantly. It's not like they are all in agreement to go, but nobody is raising any opposition. You can make an insight roll on that if you want, but...
So my insight is a 17.
You begin to put together a couple details, which is that the officious woman who just told them that it's time to go home mentioned that their parents are demanding that they come home for a hearing tomorrow. Nicole also mentioned that, you know, you can meet tomorrow. And Nicole, as she follows up, says, if you can come one after dawn's light, I would be happy to have you for breakfast at my manor. Just if you're not familiar with the city of Panda, I live in the Richie Rich Manor
on the eastern side of the city.
Oh, right. I think somebody said you had that gigantic slide, right?
And she nods and looks at the others, who all just kind of resign themselves and begin trudging towards the carriage. But the other thing I'll complete with your insight roll is that, yes, you do realize after all of this that these are rich kids and they're out partying and doing some kind of rich kid rebellion thing. But there seems to be more to it than that, because there's something to do with the hearing. And they obviously had some other kind of plot that they were trying to get off with you, but they haven't been able to talk through it with you yet. As they're being ushered into the second carriage, like I mentioned, there are two carriages hitched up. Judy is saying, it's still early. You still have time to put work in if you want to. But if you don't, your parents have been very clear. And after she kind of gives this sort of like lightly scolding, lightly chafing message at each of them, and they file in and close the carriage door behind them, Judy looks at you as the guards begin to climb into the first carriage. And she says, would you like a ride to the city, or will you be staying here with the band?
Judy, right? Hi, Judy, I'm Pam. It's super nice to meet you. I had a quick question. What do you mean when you say they need to work?
Oh, well, they are the heirs to their respective family fortunes. All of them are firstborns. Their parents are setting their last will and testaments. Due to certain political events on the horizon, they want to make sure that things are shored up in terms of how their fortunes and estates are going to pass down. And as such, tomorrow, all six of the noble families will be having hearings for people to make open cases for whatever portion of those estates they might deem themselves worthy of. So they're doing this very fairly, where the families are opening it up to business people, artisans, community outreach organizations, charities, churches, anything of that nature, to plead a case for however much money or whatever portion of an estate or property that they might feel worthy. And the children, being the heirs, are obviously a little bit upset that their inheritances are being sort of whittled away at. And their parents gave them fair opportunity to make their own cases, but instead they decided to rebel and stay out here and say that's their inheritance no matter what happens at the hearing tomorrow. And if they're not there, then it shouldn't be fair and blah, 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 blah. And here we are. Now you're here enjoying a party with them.
They don't have jobs?
Jobs? Oh, God, no.
And Pam is just like, she is taken aback by this, that like, they don't work, they don't have jobs. And to her, that's like, that's just part of, you know, her life, is everybody contributes to the community. Even her driving her wagon recklessly, she's still, you know, delivering things to taverns. And Pam is having some like, she really liked those girls, but she's like, I don't know if I want to help them keep all of this money that they don't help other people with.
You didn't notice the amazing catered buffet, the professional band that they have playing, and that they consider this roughing it to be able to hire these people and to buy out this kind of a spread?
Oh, I've seen festivals like this, but it's like the Druid highest holiday. Like it's the biggest festival we have. Everybody contributes. Like I run the bar. I mean, you see a party, it's a party, right? I thought, shit.
We had druids pass through the city a few months ago, and I suppose the proper word would be that they appropriated a lot of the style and sort of lifestyle from those people that passed through. They are not druids. They have attended one of the most expensive and exclusive wizarding academies in the Vishnan Empire, but they are not themselves druids.
All of that looked exactly like Pam is reeling. To her, what she was invited to was like a very, not, I wouldn't want to say so far as sacred, but like a private event, like a celebratory, like a ritual, something that had like some depth to it. And she was so excited about being a part of it. And now she's like, oh, it was just a bunch of people who don't contribute anything to their communities playing dress up as like these really, you know, nice, kind, serious people. Like she's reeling.
So Judy kind of reads that on your face, and she looks at the rear carriage that is already locked up, and she's beginning to climb into this first carriage and says, the offer for a ride back to the city still stands. I'm sure that your mount could follow behind, and it would be a lot safer than traveling by yourself at night or just staying out here with the band. And the band is already packing up. They're putting all their instruments into bags of holding. So they're very quickly now raiding what's left of the buffet. You're getting paid one way or another.
Yeah, so I think Pam is just gonna be like, thanks, Judy. Damn it. She's a little deflated. She still had fun, but now she's like, I don't know if I want to keep partying with these guys. So she's like, you know what? I really appreciate the offer for a ride. That's so chill of you, but I'm gonna go grab my mount and go find my friend. He wandered off to the east, and I don't want to, like, it's just bad party code to leave my friend.
And she nods and says, very respectable. If you need me, you can find me in the hall tomorrow. I'm the conservator overseeing the hearing and the distribution and execution of the last wills. My name is Judy Scheinlin, if you need to find me.
Thanks, Judy. And she kind of waves a little bit. She like waves at the other carriage and be like, bye, guys. It was nice hanging. Thanks for the party. And just turns and wanders towards where she saw Ludlow wandering off to. She's going to grab Mr. Beepo, and she and Groucho are going to hop on his back and be like, all right, let's go find Ludlow, because that went weird.
Give me a survival roll to try to track where Ludlow went.
That'd be a 17.
Oh, fantastic. So combination of Mr. Beepo's fantastic sense of smell, your knowledge of woodlands, and, you know, just being familiar with this sort of thing. You are able to pick up on his trail. He didn't exactly try to hide it or move stealthily per se. But eventually, as you go maybe a quarter mile east of the bonfire, you do see a light, as if somebody with a single torch is walking away from you. And at first, that person does seem to be of Ludlow's height. They are armored. You can't make out a lot of details. They're a couple hundred feet ahead of you. And just as you think that, okay, we should zero in on that light and catch up to Ludlow, you hear Ludlow's voice from directly to your left. Oh, Pam, has the party ended? I noticed that the music stopped.
Pam's going to look over, and can I tell that it's him?
Yeah, you can see him.
Okay, so it is in fact him. So we look at Ludlow and be like, yeah, this lady came in and broke up the party, but she actually was pretty cool about it. I don't know. Those guys were chill, but then they weren't chill, and the whole situation just doesn't seem chill. So yeah, party's over. Figure I'd come find you now. What are you doing? Why'd you wander off to?
And he kind of looks towards that torchlight that's still moving away from you all at a walking pace. He says, And he seems to pause for a moment as if he's wondering whether he should tell you. And he looks at Groucho, he looks at you, he looks at Mr. Beepo, and then he kind of shrugs to himself. There is a legend in this world of an order of knights. You see, this world has two main arms of power, aside from the kingdoms and the thrones and all that. There is the Order Infernus, to which I myself have been sworn or was sworn to. There's the Church of Honda Days. But there has always been whispers of an order of knights known as the Shining that serve another god, an unknown god, a righteous god. And I did not believe they existed until now, except that I met one tonight. He told me to consider seeking them out because I may have been forsworn or abandoned by my order in Infernus.
You made some new bros.
I made a new bro, and he was quite eccentric. I suppose it makes me question whether this Order of Shining is worth joining, but we shall see.
Can you be in a bunch of orders?
No, but while I have certain evidence that implies that I may not be a member of the Order in Infernus any longer, it has given me something to consider.
Okay, well, do you want to go get that guy? We could get the guy, I bet. Oh, by the way, buddy's name is Mr. Beepo.
Mr. Beepo. His spirits seem lifted hearing that name, and he puts a hand gently on Mr. Beepo's neck and then puts his face into the fur and says, yes, Mr. Beepo. Groucho kind of like sprawls out on the section of back that he's been riding on and just hugs Mr. Beepo's back.
Oh, I want to hug Mr. Beepo too. Let's all hug him.
Cool. Mr. Beepo gets a very big hug, and he just kind of does that little purring thing that capybaras can do, I suppose.
I want to let you know that my hug is a 14.
That's a fantastic hug.
It's a solid, solid hug.
He's very happy with it.
Pam's a little bummed about the party. She's a little bit sad about her friends. So she wants to do something to help Ludlow. Like, Ludlow, do you want to go after this guy? Like, we don't have to do anything till tomorrow morning when they have some, like, hearing thing or something. So, I don't know. How are you feeling?
It would not make much sense for me to go after him. The question is whether or not I would like to seek out the headquarters that he informed me exists with a riddle.
Wait, he didn't just tell you where it was? He told you, like, some stupid story where you have to figure out some stupid thing?
No, it wasn't a story. It's a single line that says, find us in the fiery heart beneath the frigid cage.
So what, like, sorry, I'm going to do a total stupid meta. So, like, the heat sink in a refrigerator, which is a dumb joke that I expect you to edit out.
Oh, God, if you want me to edit something out, you shouldn't have said it.
Pam doesn't know anything about anything, but somehow knows exactly what a refrigerator is, how it works, and all of the components to it.
Name of the Wind has refrigerators in it. They just use, like, enchantments and, you know, engraved charms and things like that.
So Pam's got her buds back together, Groucho, Ludlow, and Mr. Beepo. She wants to head towards the city, but find a place to camp out a little bit outside of the city and just, like, get a little rest in before she meets up with that girl for breakfast the next morning, because it's the party after breakfast. It's a good breakfast.
You follow the direction that the carriages went into. Thankfully, it's a very well-paved road. After maybe about an hour and a half, you're getting into the wee hours of the morning. So unless you, if you do want to make it for breakfast, you're not going to get a full long rest. You reach the city. As mentioned, there are these high walls with these wide open gates. There is a sort of watch person on duty, just sitting in a little booth just outside the gate. But about not even a quarter mile askance of the gate, you see this large structure that, if it weren't for the fact that it had enormous wheels that are maybe 10 feet in diameter, you would believe it was a manor itself. But this is apparently a two-story carriage the size of a house, with these huge wheels. And you can see these chains that seem like it was being pulled by something enormous, but there's nothing attached to it right now. There are blue flame torches lit on each corner of the carriage. You can see curtains drawn so that you can't see inside the carriage, but you can make out through little wisps in the curtain that there are similar blue flames lighting the interior as well.
So Pam's going to elbow Ludlow and be like, could that be the cold thing that you were talking about?
Ludlow shakes his head and says, no, if I had to guess, I'm going to think that they're probably referring to something in the mountain. There are tales.
Okay. So I'm on the outside of the gates, but I have been invited. So I would like to go up to the gatekeeper person and just be like, hey, I'm Pam. Judy said I could come through. Open up.
I mentioned the gates open. There just happens to be a watch person.
Well, I do want to, like, at least give a nod to the watch person, all like being like, hey, what's up? Nice to see you.
Yeah, they give you like a little tip of the hat and just kind of wave you through. So you're going into the town. Are you looking for an inn or are you just looking for like a park to try to camp out for the night?
You said it's about daybreak.
Like you're a couple hours away from daybreak.
All right. So I want to find like a park near Nicole's house where I'm supposed to have breakfast. And do like just a little camp out there, make sure that both Mr. Beepo and Groucho have eaten and gotten a little bit of rest if they need it.
So I would say that you recall that Nicole mentioned that she lives on the east side of town and there are these very nice sort of gardens and, you know, public park near her house, like leading up to them. So she has this sort of a buttress between her manor and the rest of the town. Even from the far side of the park, you can see her enormous mansion towering over from the eastern side of town. So you camp out for the night. You can take a short rest. And as you wake up, give me a perception roll as you wake up, actually.
Oh, 14.
So the 14, as you have woken up and you're proceeding through this park that I mentioned, you reach the sort of like outer gate of Nicole's estate. So there's the park. There's sort of an outer estate, which is open to the public during the daytime, which we're able to go through at sunup. And then there's the actual main estate gate where there are guards and an attendant maintaining sentry watch. But as you pass through the outer gate, you do notice somebody in a dark cloak with a shovel filling in a hole. And as they hear you coming, they finish up their work. They just kind of like drop the shovel into the ground and they sprint away.
Pam's going to sprint after them.
Give me a survival roll.
Oh, survival. 18.
They are trying to make hard turns and they're trying to go into the back into the brush and the sort of foliage of the park that I mentioned to try to lose you so that they can break line of sight with you. But you're able to keep up with them. They eventually head towards the outer wall of the city. They're behind some of the residential buildings on the other edge of the park. And they begin trying to climb one of the houses. So I mentioned that the walls of the city are about, you know, 3 or 4 stories tall. So they're trying to climb onto this 2-story, like, thatched roof house. It seems like they're either going to run, try to make a break for it across the rooftops or use that as a jumping pad to get to the wall. What would you like to do?
Where am I in relation to them?
You're right behind them. So because of your survival roll, you've been able to keep up with them so far.
Okay, I just want to grab him by the back of the cloak and just like yank him back as hard as I can.
So I will say that now that you're out in the open and have a good line of sight on them, because you can see them trying to scamper up, go ahead and give me a melee attack roll. So just call it an arm strike to try to grab them.
12.
They're scampering up the side of this building. And you manage to get them by, like, the hem of the cloak, but you get a good enough grip to just, like, time your yank, where you're yanking when they're both moving to try to get a foothold and a handhold, and you just pull them in just the right way that they slam down to the ground and they're prone. I need you to make a wisdom save for me.
Oh, Jesus. 9.
So with a 9, unfortunately, you're going to take some psychic damage. This person, this thing, as they fall onto the ground on their back and the hood of their cloak sort of like just falls off their head, you see pallid purple skin that seems to be coated in like a thin film of some kind of slime and mucus. Where there should be a mouth, you see mandibles just spread open like the predator. And there's a screeching noise of fury coming from them. Sickly, toxic yellow eyes are glaring up at you as this thing flails and squirms. And you are going to take 4 psychic damage just from what you are looking at and the noise you are hearing and just the sheer unbelievability that this creature exists.
All right, I want to hit it with my great axe.
Go ahead and give me an attack. You get advantage because it's currently prone.
That was a natural 20 plus 5.
So you get to roll double damage dice.
So it's 2d12 plus 3. 15 damage.
This thing on its turn, it has to use its movement to get back onto its feet. It caught your great axe right in its forearm, and you just crunched right through a portion of their forearm bone. Using their movement, they kind of like throw the axe out with this great squelching noise as this green blood just flips across your chest. They're going to stand up and they say a word in this gurgling voice. I need you to make a wisdom saving throw again.
6.
You feel this crushing force on your mind as this creature just causes this magical force to dilute your perception, to make everything sort of feel like you're basically like your controller has been flipped. That is the sort of feeling that you're getting, that everything has sort of been remapped on your perception and your actions. The creature is going to make a break for it, and you will get an opportunity attack. Oh, actually, except that the spell means that you can't take a reaction, so you will not get an opportunity attack. So the creature is able to slip away, and it starts scurrying up the building and leaving this trail of green blood on the side of the wall as it climbs away from you. It's only able to get up to hanging from the edge of the roof with its movement, so it's still within sight of you, and it's now your turn again. Well, first, let me ask you, roll a d10, because that'll determine whether or not you can do anything this turn.
2.
Unfortunately, you just feel that crushing weight, and it's kind of like your body is just locked up. Your mind is seeing this thing running away. You're seeing that you should chase it, or that you should throw something at it, or do any number of things, but you cannot will yourself to move.
Pam has taken in a lot from this moment, because she thought it was like some random dude doing something creepy, and it turned into like some weird monster, and I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't that. And now I don't know what to do.
The creature, using its turn, just as Ludlow races out from the park behind you, he looks at you and looks up at the creature. He doesn't have any ranged weapons, unfortunately, so he just kind of looks at you and just tries to shake you out of it. As the creature is using its movement, it pulls itself up onto the roof, and it's going to roll to try to jump to catch the wall. Ooh! It takes a running start off the roof and just manages to catch the lip of the wall. But again, it has used all its movement to climb up onto the roof, make the jump, and then catch itself on the wall. So you still have a chance. I forgot that you can actually make a wisdom save at the end of the turn to try to cure the confusion. So give me another wisdom save.
That's been going great so far. So let's see how this one goes. 4.
So that was for your previous turn. So now for this turn, as the creature is hanging from the wall, give me another d10 roll, because there is a chance that even with confusion still on, you can still act and perform actions and things like that.
All right, so a d10. 9.
So with a 9, you can act and move normally. So you do have a chance. This creature is about 30 feet above you, like hanging from its hands from this wall. So what do you want to do?
I'm going to whip my javelin at him.
Go ahead and give me an attack roll.
9.
Ooh, so unfortunately, with a 9, you throw your javelin, and you do notice Ludlow admiring the rippling of your deltoids as you throw with great form, and the javelin buries itself like 8 inches into like a crack in the stone wall right next to this creature's knee. And the creature makes that noise and uses the javelin as a foothold to then press itself up over the lip of the wall. And it just rolls over the other side of the wall into the exterior of the city.
Pam's just going to shrug. She's going to walk up to the wall, retrieve her javelin, look over at Ludlow, be like, that went real bad. Let's go get some breakfast.
So you are turning back and heading back to the manor?
Yes. But before I go into the manor, I do want to check out that hole that weirdo was digging.
You find the hole that he was digging. It's, you see, just like this fairly large square of recently packed dirt. I'm going to assume that you want to like uncover it and dig it up a little bit.
Because you mentioned that he threw the shovel down and ran, which is what caught Pam's attention. Like, nobody who's actually working would abandon their shovel. So she's going to grab the shovel and kind of like gently remove layer after layer of the dirt just to carefully see what's under there.
You dig maybe about 8 inches down. It's not very deep to hit something. You almost immediately, like on first jab of the shovel, hear this hard metal clang.
So relieved that it's metal.
Hang on, give me a second to undo that relief, because the metal that she hits sounds undoubtedly hollow, and it sounds hollow to a degree that is unsettlingly deep.
All right. Pam doesn't want any trouble, and she sees that this could be trouble. So what she's going to do is she's going to go up to the people kind of manning the front of the house. You said there's like some sentries there and stuff, like a gate person. And she's going to be like, hey, guys, I'm Pam. Nicole invited me for breakfast. But some guy was messing up your lawn over there, and I think he buried something weird. And I really think you need to check that out.
Are you carrying the shovel with you while you do this?
No, I left the shovel by the thing. I hit the clank, I drop the shovel, I go find the guys.
The guards follow you with the attendant that I mentioned who's at the gate. They can see the partially unearthed metal surface, and they help clear out the rest of the dirt, and you find a hatch door. It's made of this very heavy, very dark-looking cast iron, and all of them trade looks with each other and then look at the attendant in particular. And the attendant gives this sort of grim, harrowed look and shakes his head.
No, there has never been a hatch here. I'm very familiar with the plans and the blueprints for the estate. This does not belong here. We have never put it here.
Pam's going to look at the guy and just be like, okay, well, that sounds like a you problem. And I'm really glad that you guys are on top of it and you understand what's going on and that it's a problem. But could you please tell Nicole that I am here for breakfast and Ludlow and I would like some mimosas, please?
And so he's kneeling down, examining the hatch. And as you say that, he looks at Ludlow and very impassively, but then he looks at you and just starts to laugh and says,
Pam just wants to walk up to this man and just kind of like big dog him a little bit, just like physically. Can I just roll intimidation on this man?
Yes, absolutely.
Come on, Pam, come on. 23.
And he says, oh, you're being quite serious. Oh, well, pardon me, because if you have received an invitation from the young Nicole, it is entirely possible that she is, how do I say this delicately, since you seem to be in an inflamed state?
She's probably using you just to piss off her dad. Somebody like you showing up is just going to send him through the roof.
Yes, that is quite the, that is usually the typical move that Miss Nicole does.
Pam is going to clap her hands and be like, that sounds like such a fun bonus to my breakfast and mimosas.
All it needs, if we could help you out, if you don't want to be the subject of or the object of Miss Nicole's ongoing rebellion against her father, Sir Lionel, the easiest thing to do is to, find yourself more proper attire. You know, perhaps, go to the haberdashery and the, tailors.
She's going to look at him and be like, how about I just take what you're wearing? So I just want to intimidate him and be like, my clothes are fine, motherfucker.
Think that he has two guards on his side. You can roll intimidation, but you're rolling it with disadvantage on that one.
I will try this again with disadvantage. All right. The first one is an unnatural 20. The second one is a 22.
Ooh, so with that, he looks at you, he reaches into his pocket, into his inner coat, and says, I do not mean to insult you, madam. I would like to honor your invitation, but I would like to also honor you for informing us of this incident of oddity and peculiarity happening out here. So here's what I'm going to do. Here are 10 gold that you can use to go and purchase yourself a fine set of clothing that will be very appropriate, that Miss Nicole can still have her little jape that she's parading a friend in front of her father, but you will not be the subject of his consternation for showing up ill attired. Does that sound suitable to you?
He's like, okay, fine. I get it. Sometimes parties have dress codes. It's fine. Where's this stupid dress place?
And he says, oh, I would recommend that you go to Taylor John Max's. We call it TJ Maxx for short. It is right up the boulevard. Take a right and you should spot the sign very easily from there.
And she's going to be like, oh, I actually know that. We have a really tiny one in my village. It's the greatest. Okay, yes, absolutely. I'm heading to TJ Maxx. I'm going to get a cute dress and I will be back. And when she says, I will be back, I want it to be like just a little bit more intimidating. Just like,
all right,
do I have to roll for that or do my earlier intimidations carry over?
No, he's on your side. Like, you don't need to continue intimidating him. I don't think it'll have any effect. He's more concerned with the hatch at this point now that he's taken care of you and given you money for a free outfit.
Hell yeah, let's go shopping montage.
I'll say that I don't want to do the JRPG thing of constantly throwing like a chain of complications in for this very simple destination that you're trying to get into. Like, it's a clothing shop. It's open. You have money.
I think what Pam's going to do is just walk into the store, be like, hey, I have a breakfast thing at this girl's house. Can you just put me in a dress that's going to fit me and get me through the doors?
Oh, so you're not doing the dress montage thing.
Pam's not interested in that, but she is going to look over at Ludlow, her precious Ludlow, that she's just feeling kind of warm towards him. He's been seeming a little down and she just wants to know, like, hey, do you want anything? Do you need anything? Because, like, I already had gold and he gave me even more gold. You know, you want a hat maybe?
He does look around the shop and says, actually, I think I'll be, I have some items to barter, so I'll be able to take care of myself. And I also have some gold, but thank you. So he does kind of wander off to take care of his own shopping. But by the time you leave TJ Maxx's, he no longer has his Order of Infernus armor. He is wearing just plain leather armor now.
And Pam's going to clock the new outfit and just be like, oh, you look great. I love this look on you.
And he just bows his head gratefully. And he also produces a little sweater for Groucho.
Can Pam hug him?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pam is overwhelmed by how cute this is. Like, he's kind of coming into his own a little bit. He's, you know, casting off the shackles of his order and being his own man. He got my puppy a sweater, and Pam is just losing it. She's like, this man is amazing, and she gives him a big hug. Can I roll charisma on him?
You absolutely can.
An 11?
Yeah, unfortunately, he's still seems a little bit distracted after the hug. It's one of those hugs where, like, the hug seems to only remind him of something else that he has on his mind. And as you pull away, it's not so much you. It's very much that his gaze is off in the middle distance, and he seems to be thinking of something else that is getting in the way of this moment.
Aw, bud, come on. Let's go get some breakfast.
Well, as you are walking back, and as you are reaching that point in the park where you no longer see the attendant or either of the guards, but you do see that the hatch is open. Give me a perception roll, just for funsies.
She got an 18.
With an 18, there's a sour smell in the air. It's pungent. It feels like it's almost burning your throat.
She's going to talk to Groucho and be like, hey, Groucho, what's your read on this smell?
It doesn't smell just like the black powder, but I don't know. It feels like it's sort of in the same family. Ludlow?
Ludlow has stopped walking while you all take a few steps, and he's just staring at the hatch. And he kind of like licks his finger, sticks it up in the air, and says, we're downwind of the hatch. It seems to be coming from whatever is down there. And he starts to take a step towards it, just as you all are reaching that outer gate. And I need you to make a dex saving throw, Pam.
All right. A 9.
So with a 9, let me roll. So with your 9, you almost are thrown off the saddle, but thankfully Mr. Beepo is able to sort of compensate and catch you and sort of roll with you through the gate and towards the estate, because all of a sudden there is this shaking and quaking and this booming noise as you hear this sort of like roaring, rushing up as if an enormous gale force wind is blowing in that hatch. And then all of a sudden, a tower of fire shoots up out of it the ground right at the outer gate that Mr. Bebo has just launched himself over the threshold for you just cracks as if somebody is breaking the land in two to separate this estate from the rest of the city. You turn around just as you're under Mr. Bebo and you look back through the gate. You see Ludlow staring at the Tower of Flame and his face turns as other towers and jets of flame shoot up around the perimeter of the city. And as he counts 13 of them in turn, he turns and looks at you and he just holds a fist up and closes his eyes as the ground drops and he disappears. And as you look over the edge, you see the entire city disappearing and falling down, down, down into darkness.
Thank you for listening to D&D Versus. This episode features Stefan Nunes as Smashin' Pam, and yours truly, Yanato Ballou, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast. Support our podcast and get access to additional content at patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes out on May 15th.